You know, sort of like saying a cattle jack. You know, you can't say cattle.
I ain't saying it because you know what happens when you say candle jack.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 316, recorded on July 8th, 2013. Hello, and welcome to the 316th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 149th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on gaming news from around the industry and includes leaders... VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and... damn it. The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes listener feedback and gaming history. So, Jordan...
Ooh, we have a gaming history now. Nice.
Yes. So, Jordan, what have you been playing?
I have been playing a game that I borrowed from Alan called Dragon's Dogma, which is a PS3 and Xbox title from Capcom. Capcom kind of did a scumbag maneuver. Instead of releasing DLC for a game that, you know, supports DLC, they released extra content as an expanded version of the game.
Yeah.
So if you buy the latest version of Dragon's Dogma, you get all the new content plus the original game, but there is no DLC, which kind of drove my son crazy. But I did find it on sale for $28, so I picked it up and I've been playing it, and it's kind of interesting. It's a little...
Do you see where you can create your henchmen that other people can employ?
Create your own henchmen that other people can experience online, and it's kind of interesting. It's a little unfocused, I find, but it's a decent game.
Yeah, the boss battles are supposed to be really good too, like fighting griffins and hydras and all
boss
that
battles
stuff.
Are freaking huge. They're gigantic creatures to take down. Yes.
Well, I haven't been playing much lately. I've just been playing NBA 2K13 on my PC. I haven't really had time to do anything else. I'm going to be going to Vegas this coming weekend, so it's actually not going to interrupt our schedule. It's just just going to be in Vegas, and there's not going to be any hangover movies performed there.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, Jonah.
Unless I win a jackpot, then it leaves Vegas in a big way. This week we have a lot of interesting stuff. Why don't you take away the first? Do the first item, Jordan?
Ubisoft, Xbox One version of Watch Dogs more dynamic than PS4 and current-gen versions from Gaming Target. Watch Dogs producer Dominic Guay has announced the Xbox One version of Watch Dogs will have a more dynamic city than the PlayStation 4 or current-gen versions of the game. He went on to say that Microsoft's cloud service will make a difference between Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions of the game. Quote, physics calculations similarly aren't dependent on strict timing, the way a tree reacts to weather. It's physics, right? Guay explained. It's bending materials. Well, what if I could run that on the cloud? It doesn't need to be fully synced. There are occasions where there would be an advantage, but it's clear in the short term there's plenty of power within the machines. That's where our engineers are working. For example, we're able to simulate the water in full 3D. If you go on a boat, the waves that form will affect other boats. We're also able to spend more time giving brains to other people on the streets so they can basically be smarter and there can be more of them. It's what I call dynamism, basically, the way the city reacts to you. We're able to push farther on the Xbox One.
Well, I guess Microsoft getting 300,000 servers is going to pay off. I mean, the original reason that they had those servers, right, was because they're going to have the always online. And if you're going to do that, you better never, ever have your servers go down, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing was that the other advantage was that not only were multiplayer people going to take advantage of this, which is an obvious benefit, but single player games would be able to take advantage of it. So I think this might be a good thing for Microsoft because now they can say, oh, look, you know, there is a use for it for single player.
I think that they can certainly make that argument. Those of us who have been in the IT long enough to have seen the cloud become a buzz phrase are skeptical. And I put myself in that camp.
Well,
and
we're talking about a developer.
They start
here,
talking
though.
About processing stuff in the cloud. My reaction is citation needed. We'll see what it comes out with when they actually launch it. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, but you know what? It's actually, you know, the thing is that suppose what he's saying is absolutely true, that you can actually sort of like, what's the word I'm looking for? You could multitask in a more creative way by using the cloud to do some stuff that you don't want the processor to do.
Yeah, but that's, you know, getting that cloud, that information from the cloud to the console is still going to depend on your internet connection.
Well, he said they aren't, they don't need to be synced.
They don't need to be fully synced. But I mean, if they don't need to be fully synced, then you can't get that data to the machine. So if I'm playing the game and I don't have an internet connection, I do not benefit.
What they're saying is that the lag isn't a problem, is what they're saying, if there's a lag to it. In other words, you know,
you can't be playing a single player game and have processing happening in the cloud if there's no internet connection. That just doesn't work. So that in and of itself, saying that the sync doesn't have to be dynamic, is bull. So, you know,
how many people do you know are going to be playing without being online, though?
Well, you know, and that's a fair question, and we'll see how it reacts when it actually comes out. But right now, I've seen too many promises about the cloud that go nowhere, so I'm not holding my breath.
You know, what this actually makes me think is that, you know how certain Xbox 360 games will sometimes say better with Kinect?
Yes.
Maybe they'll have a cloud. Maybe they'll have a little logo that says better with the cloud.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that, you know, and by the way, there's a lot of these stories that have been coming out that have actually started bolstering the Xbox One's pre-order sales. I mean, in a big way. It's like, now that the dust is cleared, it's like people no longer have to worry about that DRM boogeyman, you know?
Right.
It's like they're starting to see what benefits it has. So the other news item that was revealed was that Microsoft, for the first time ever, is going to have a conference at Gamescom 2013.
Oh, nice.
Now, we know why. Actually, I can guess why all of a sudden Microsoft is doing this, because remember who they hired? They hired Phil Harrison, who's basically the chief of Sony Computer's Europe Entertainment, right? And everything that he did was all about Europe. Well, now Microsoft got him and they said, you know what? We want you to give the Xbox a bigger presence in Europe, because remember, we said this already. The Xbox One, the Xbox 360 sells well in English-speaking countries, and in foreign language countries, not so much, you know?
Right.
And the one thing that I keep on thinking is, you know what? Gamescom is in August. What if they use Gamescom to announce the subsidy? The timing is right for it, wouldn't you think?
If they had a subsidy plan, they would have announced it already.
No, I mean, well, they're going to be announcing something big there. They just haven't said what. And I'm willing to bet you it's going to be the subsidy. Because the only barrier right now in Microsoft's eyes is the price.
Well, the price is higher in Europe if you adjust for currency conversion. The other thing is that they still haven't announced a precise time. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to keep the price. They will just give the exact date for the Xbox One launch.
Mm. Anyway, some other news popped up, and actually the first part of this popped up on the day that we recorded our podcast, of course. And then, fortunately, the story kept expanding so that, you know, we have more to talk about. And the timing of this news item is extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? The timing of this news is extremely interesting.
Yes.
Microsoft President Don Mattrick leaves to be Zynga CEO, and this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Microsoft President of Interactive Entertainment, read as the Windows games and Xbox consoles, Don Mattrick will be handing to Zynga as a quote-unquote top executive, speculated to be the CEO. Actually, that's no longer speculated. It is now officially the CEO. Yeah. Mattrick had reportedly been in negotiations with Zynga for some time. Zynga has been in dire financial troubles for the past few years, highlighted by their bitter lawsuit battle with Electronic Arts and cutting 520 jobs 3 weeks ago. The casual gaming giant had been hiring many major execs in the industry. Developer Dave Marsh noted on Twitter, and I love this quote, "Zynga is like the retirement home for executives." Don Mattrick was reportedly Electronic Arts' front runner to replace former CEO John Riccitiello. Larry Probst is currently EA's interim CEO, and for those of you who don't know, Larry Probst was also the CEO of Electronic Arts for, what, two decades before John Riccitiello took over?
The golden era for Electronic Arts, yes.
According to the SEC, Zynga has disclosed Matrix compensation. Matrix will be getting $1 million per year in base compensation with a $5 million signing bonus. Now, due to foregone stock, Zynga has extended a quote-unquote make-whole grant that totals $25 million in stock, vesting over 3 years, with $22.6 million of it split between the first 2 years. Finally, Matrix will get $15 million in stock, so in 2014 he'll be eligible for performance bonuses of $2 to $4 million in cash and $7 million in stock, which is basically, at minimum, he's going to be getting $50 million, and he could be getting $60 million out of this. News service Bloomberg is reporting that in 2010, Matrick tried to get Microsoft to purchase Zynga. Back in 2010, Zynga was the hottest commodity with a casual social gaming service with killer social apps like Mafia Wars and the Ville titles, you know, Farmville, Cityville, and so on. However, despite the increase of Facebook users, Zynga's games fell off in popularity thanks to the rise of, guess what, tablet and smartphone gaming. Yeah, you know, and I was thinking, you know, Nintendo always always thought that Apple was its biggest competitor. I think Apple was Facebook's biggest competitor, and well, not Facebook, but you know, Facebook development games, and Apple just slapped them in the face.
Well, that and I think Zynga's biggest drawback was Zynga itself. When I kept having to go into Facebook and say, block all updates for Mafia Wars, block all updates for Mafia for Farmville, I almost said Farm Wars and Mafiaville, which would have been completely wrong.
There's a nice little thing. We're going to make a game called Mafiaville.
Mafiaville. Actually, you know, that title has potential. I better trademark that quick before Zynga gets a hold of it.
That's a lawsuit that can happen.
But, you know, they made a business model out of annoying people who are not playing their games.
Wasn't that
which basically it takes a lot of talent to annoy people who aren't playing your games.
Well, didn't those games originate on MySpace? I mean, I know Mafia Wars did.
I don't know. I paid as little attention to MySpace as possible.
I mean, I've been playing the EA, and by the way, the ironic thing is that EA is doing better on Facebook than Zynga ever did. I mean,
I also just said Mafia Space, so yeah.
I mean,
there's another free title.
I'm actually enjoying the Plants vs. Zombies Facebook game, which I haven't updated in a while, though. You know, I just don't want to have to buy something, you know, those stupid gems just to get extra plants. You know, do I really want to spend $5 on it? You know, that's my little quandary here. But
I find it hilarious that Don Matrick, who was the one of the big defenders of the Xbox One original plan, original recipe, yeah. I don't know what you want to call it, immediately after everything changed, is going and leaving for Zynga.
It's coincidental, though. I mean, the timing is coincidental.
I'm sure it was coincidental because a deal like this does not happen that fast, right? It had to have been in the works for months.
But what you can think is, how committed was Don Matrick to the Xbox One then? How could he possibly be that, you know, connected to it if he knows he's not going to be around for it?
Well, and so the question then becomes, what I was posing to you is, you know, if Microsoft had no intention of following through with this, why did they make it worse every time they opened their mouth?
Well, and that's Matrick, the guy, the confusion, Matrick, the message the guy, confusion, yes.
Matrick's the guy who is saying, what are you playing on a submarine? Go buy the Xbox 360.
Well, it isn't just that. It's that he was giving contradictory statements that his underlings were given. His underling would say one thing, Matrick would say another thing, you know? And I think it's that the signal that Microsoft was giving was confused, and maybe we know why, and maybe the Xbox One is better because Matrick is gone. Not that Matrick is a bad seller of something, but you know, the Xbox 360 did extremely well. As a matter of fact, you have to wonder how well it would have done if it never had those technical issues to begin with.
That's true.
You have to wonder how invested Matrick was with the Xbox One. And you know, maybe if he's making decisions, he's saying, "Oh, is online DRM? Yeah, that'll please the people upstairs. I don't really care what anybody else says because I'm not going to be here anyway." I mean, if the Xbox One crashes and burns, and I wonder how soon we said that Xbox Microsoft did an abrupt about face, really abrupt. According to Arthur Geese, the weekend before Microsoft said that they were going to take away all that DRM stuff, the weekend before that, they were still going full steam with it. So I'm wondering what happened that weekend that made them change their minds. Could it be Microsoft found out, wait, Matrick is leaving?
I think it had more to do with Microsoft finally got the pre-order numbers.
No, I mean, they were getting the pre-orders before that. I mean, that the thing that we speculated was, well, you know, the message was bad, but Microsoft didn't start caring until it started hitting places like, Bloomberg and the Wall Right. Street Journal and all that. But you have to wonder if Matrick leaving was sort of like people say, listen, okay, we're going to stop this right now because Matrick wasn't, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. Well, he didn't know. Let's just say, I'm not going to keep repeating that he wasn't invested, but you know, you have to wonder how attached he was to the Xbox One if he knew he wasn't going to be there.
He didn't have his head in the game.
Especially since he's going to a platform that has nothing to do with consoles at all. Right. I mean, it might have been a different story if it had been Electronic Arts, right?
Right.
But...
Well, and we saw that after the original Xbox launched, right? What's
Xbox,
his name?
Xbox One?
The Xbox One. The original Xbox.
The original Xbox One, yes. The one before the one.
After it launched, there were a whole bunch of executives that went to other companies. And the same thing with the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3. So, you know, when a console launches, it's not unusual for executives to use that as a stepping stone
before
to other companies. What is strange is an executive using it as a stepping stone to go to a company that's on life support.
Money, dear boy. He's going to get $50 million no matter what happens to Zynga.
Right.
If it was me, I would run, not walk to Zynga if they were giving me that kind of money. You know, because you're not going to get as paid as much being the CEO of a division of Microsoft. You know, you're not Bill Gates.
That's true.
You know, I think Microsoft has to be really, really glad they have Phil Harrison. Because Phil Harrison knows how to be on point with message and knows how to sell the right message. And I found it a little weird that he wasn't saying anything. You notice that you forgot Phil Harrison was even employed by Microsoft for a long while.
That's true.
You know, so you have to wonder if you're going to have a single voice now. Because, again, like we just said, the main difficulty that Microsoft has was talking out of both sides of its mouth. You didn't know what was going on there.
Right.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item.
Sony DualShock 4 controller's light bar cannot be turned off, and this comes to us from That Video Game Blog.
Wait. Which video game blog?
That Video Game Blog.
Ah, That Video Game Blog. Okay.
Who's on first? Questions have been raised about the DualShock 4 controller for the PlayStation 4, and Shuhei Yoshida answered some of them. One of the biggest concerns is the battery drain on the controller, which features included on it, including the light bar, which is not only used in conjunction with the PlayStation camera, which was dropped as a PS4 bundle item to lower the price of the system, but will light up and change colors during play. Yoshida flatly stated that players won't be able to turn it off. Oddly, the two USB ports on the controller are in the front instead of the back to easily charge the controller while playing, which may hint at the speed of how quickly the controller will run out of power on its own.
By the way, the easily charge was Yoshida's quote. So we already have this problem with the Wiimote controller, that big tablet thing. You know, that thing runs out of power in like, what, 2-3 hours?
Well, forget the Wiimote. The PlayStation 3 controllers don't hold a charge worth a damn. And they don't have a light-up accessory.
Yeah.
So that makes me wonder exactly how well the PlayStation 4 controller is going to go.
Well, the thing is that, you know, this is also – it's sort of like an artifact, though, isn't it? I mean, if it was, you can see how much that Sony was going to include the camera until all that negative feedback from Microsoft, you know? I mean, they didn't even have time to change the controller.
That's true.
So
– Well, and I don't think there's a need to change the controller. I mean, it's a better alternative than having the Move thing be separate.
Yeah.
So they might as well include it as part of the controller. But you know,
when you say you want to have your charger controlling while you're charging while you're playing, doesn't that send a little bit of a worry for some people? It's like, wait a minute, you mean while I'm playing, I might have to start charging it while I'm playing? Isn't that defeating the purpose of a wireless controller?
I have to do that with the PlayStation 3 now.
Really?
The problem with the PlayStation 3 is this, and they could fix it easily with the PS4. I hope they do. The PS3 will not charge your controller if it's turned off. If the PS3 is turned off, if you leave your controller plugged into it overnight, but the PS3 is turned off, it will not charge the controller.
What? Why?
Because the USB ports aren't active unless it's turned on.
Oh, okay. But wait, don't you have external chargers, though?
There are external chargers that you can buy, yeah.
Okay. The thing is that I don't trust wireless controllers anyway. I always prefer wired controllers. It's just me. I don't like wireless controllers.
I don't have a problem with wireless in general, but you know, the PS3 made it difficult. The Xbox 360 wireless is fine, except for the big lump in the middle of it that
which they removed from the Xbox One controller,
right?
Because they got the bright idea, hey, you know what? Let's just make the battery on its side. I hope that doesn't have any weird sort of aft. No, it doesn't, because people have been using it. I don't know if I told you this on the podcast yet, but a lot of people have been raving about the Xbox One controller simply because they shifted two of the shoulder buttons a little bit closer so that they actually, you know, ergonomics at work here. So I could never use the DualShock controllers because I don't like where the analog sticks are. I prefer the up and down analog sticks on the 360 controller rather than having them both on top as they are on the DualShock. I don't know if you have any preferences there.
It doesn't really matter to me. I mean, the first dual analog stick I ever used was a PlayStation controller. So it was no big deal adjusting either way.
Yeah. The first analog stick I ever used was from the Dreamcast, actually, now that I think about it.
Well, I said the first dual analog.
I know, I'm just saying the first game analog gamepad that I ever used was from the Dreamcast. Actually, the first dual analog that I ever used was from the Xbox. The big Duke.
Right.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Indian PC gamers upset at Origin price increases. And this comes to us from VG247. Gamers in India will be spending more rupees on their PC games off Origin, Electronic Arts Digital Distribution Service, though in EA's case, it's because of foreigners taking advantage of the low prices in the first place. Games that were normally 1,000 to 1,500 rupees, which is $16.50 to $25 US, which made foreign gamers create bogus Indian accounts so they could take advantage. To combat that, Battlefield 4 and Need for Speed Rivals pre-orders are now 3,500 rupees, which is $58 US. This has put innocent Indian gamers in the crossfire, as they'll now have to deal with the more than doubled prices for new games. To protest, a new Twitter hashtag, EAPCIndia, has appeared. And, you know, you can't really fault EA here, because if people are going to create bogus bogus Indian accounts just to get, you know, pay less for games that they shouldn't be paying less for, there's only one solution I have for this. Let's see if you can guess what my solution is.
Global pricing?
No. They're not going to sell all their games for $25. That's not going to happen. But what I'm thinking is, you know, what if Indian gamers registered with EA and had sort of proof that they're living in India? You know, it's sort of like a discount thing.
It would be very easy to do from the IP address. You just do a reverse lookup on the IP address, and it will tell you if they're in India or not.
You know, you can spoof IP addresses. That's not good enough. I mean, a credit card, or mail into something to EA, and you get your own private code that only you can use.
That's true.
You know, I mean, it sucks when you're all of a sudden you have to pay. Imagine if, you know, we were in that position, and instead of paying $60 for our games, all of a sudden we're paying $135 for our games.
What if they did that to the poor Australian people who are already paying double for their games?
Yeah, now if they start paying $250 for individual games, it's like they're owning a Neo Geo.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, Australian people get their games from the U.S. all the time because their native game prices are double. So wouldn't that cut against them as well?
Which is why there was a huge cheer when Microsoft announced that the Xbox One would be region free.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. By the way, do you miss that that Chinese site that sold stuff?
Lixang? I miss Lixang every single day.
Huh.
I didn't even have to wait for you to finish to say Lixang. I miss Lixang.
So why don't you describe Lixang for the viewers who don't know what Lixang is?
Lixang was an import-export house in Asia, and basically, as an American, I could order pretty much anything I wanted and get it sent over. So if I wanted a Japanese game or a Japanese console, all I had to do is hit Lixang's website, and it would be shortly on its way to me.
And the best part, there was no shipping and handling, was there?
No, there was shipping and handling, but I mean,
it wasn't that big, though. Shipping and handling
wasn't that big. It was all reasonable. All the prices were reasonable, and the shipping was reasonable. And if there were any mistakes on the order, they would take care of you. The problem was Sony cracked down on them over shipping the PSP to Europe, because the Asian PSPs were so much cheaper than the European PSPs. Sony claimed that the power units were unsafe for use in Europe, which was total BS, and used that as an excuse and actually shut down Lixang. Lixang ceased to be. They are an import-export agency.
Yeah. So
fortunately, there are several good places in America where you can get imported goods now. So that's not a big deal. Or even back then.
Yeah, but you know the prices that you paid for these games, though, were normal. There was, you know, you didn't have the import fees.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what I was going to say now. When was it shut down? It was like 2006, 2007?
2007, something like that.
Sony claimed that Lixang infringed on its trademarks, copyright, and registered design rights by selling Sony PSP consoles from Asia to European customers, and recently obtained a judgment from the High Court of London, rendering Lixang's sales of PSP consoles unlawful. The voltage supply differences, etc., were not backwards, were not compatible. But Lixang said that Sony failed to disclose to the London High Court, not only in the worldwide gaming community, more than 100 countries relied on Lixang for their gaming needs, but also Sony Europe's very own top directors repeatedly got their Sony PSP hardware software imports from nicely packed Lixang parcels with free Lixang mugs or Lixang badge holders, starting with just 2 days after this. So the thing is that not only were you buying from Lixang, but Sony officials in Europe were using Lixang.
Yes, because they could get the goods before Sony was officially releasing them in Europe. So the other import-export house that I do business with all the time, and I'll give them a free plug, National Console Support. It's www.ncsx.com. Very nice people, and they're located in New York.
Oh, come on. Oh, it's 718. Okay, so this one's in the outer boroughs. Okay. There's one also in Manhattan, which is also there. So anyways, so we're going to move on to reader feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
So reader feedback from Hair Alien. At PS4 did always have DRM camera, but Sony changed it to D3. If this is true, then damn it, the customer still has some power. I guess not being the first to present the product is not entirely bad. Actually, they've come out and said that they did not have plans to do the always on DRM.
Which is complete and utter bullshit, because we've seen their patents. We've seen the 2006 patents. We saw the 2012 patents. Don't even
at
bother.
Xbox One capabilities, it's easy to mess up specs. I mean, the sales guys don't know tech mumbo jumbo, so yeah. Now, I'd go and say that even the initial estimated bandwidth, the difference should not be that big. Read, write simultaneously, that's a pretty good thing. In theory, that can double the effectiveness of the hardware, at least in some instances, as opposed to when having to do them sequentially. Still, PS4 looks a bit more attractive. Don't know why. Maybe because the initial fiasco of the Xbox One. Now on compatibility, wasn't it supposed to be Win 8 to also play Xbox 360 games? Does this mean that the Xbox One will play 360 games?
No, well, no, because what happens was that plan for Windows 8, basically what they were going to do is going to sell an emulator, right? Yeah. And they're not going to do it anytime soon either. So long as the 360 is alive and well, they're not going to do it. But an emulator, and they would just have it phone home, making sure they had Xbox Live Gold. I don't know if they're still going to do that, but so long as they're keeping the Xbox 360 alive for like maybe 2 more years, they're not going to do it.
Yeah. At Xbox One, getting Unity support to aid indie developers. Interesting. Still, XBLA was not all sunshine and rainbows. And he gives a link.
Jonathan Blow and Team Meat. Basically, the guy who's doing... Oh, what's that stupid puzzle game? Well, Jonathan Blow did Braid, and Team Meat did Super Meat Boy, and also are doing Eugenics, and also did the Binding of Isaac.
Right. But John Blow, Braid was amazing. That Super Meat Boy was just kind of weak, but...
Well, it started off as a Flash game, I mean... You know.
Yeah, exactly.
But the entire thing about that, it's sort of like a new age Jumpman or new... Oh, damn, what was the other game that was Lode Runner? Like a new age Lode Runner, because basically wasn't that the fact that you had all these levels you had to navigate in sort of like a puzzle, but it has the editor so that you can send your friends your levels to see if they can get past it, just like Lode Runner.
The gag was that you were made out of meat and you had to get through the buzzsaw-laden levels.
And PETA was taken in by them completely, because it wasn't that he was meat that was going to be eaten. He just didn't have any skin.
Right, exactly. I actually liked, there was an iPhone and Android game called Tofu, which I enjoyed much better than
that's what PETA did. Super Tofu Boy, you know? And then what was funny was that Team Meat turned it on PETA and had their own Tofu Boy in the game in Super Meat Boy. But the problem is that he couldn't do anything because he wasn't made of meat, you know? So he didn't have any powers. He couldn't jump. He couldn't do anything. So it was sort of like a gag character.
So after the link to John Blow and Team Meat done with Xbox, so what gives? Okay, the link is from March, but still, if this isn't confusing, I don't know what is. Team Meat, your reply on this recent development.
Well, I will say this. James Silva of Ska Studios, his game is coming out in 2 weeks, Charlie Murder. And for those of you who don't know who he is, he also did the Vampire Dishwasher games. Dishwasher, Vampire, you know, the two Dishwasher games. And what's interesting is that I don't know if he did this story, but someone was really upset that the Dishwasher Vampire Smile was on Xbox Live Arcade, so they decided to pirate it and then cloud it in. Oh, but we did this for the benefit of PC gamers, not knowing that James Silva was in negotiations with Microsoft to bring it to Steam. So
what's the deal with vampire dishwashers? Is the goal to clean the dishes so well you can't see your reflection in them?
No, it's just a guy who was a dishwasher, and now he has to deal with vampires.
Oh, okay.
And his sister is a vampire. Anyways, Charlie Murder is coming out in 2 weeks. So not every indie, you know, game. And the funny thing is, remember Happy Games, the guys who did Joe Danger? They went on and on and on and on and on about how unfair Microsoft was and how they weren't giving, you know, and that's why you'd never see Joe Danger on XBLA. And then a few months later, oh, guess what? Joe Danger is going to be on XBLA. Oh, no, by the way, Joe Danger 2 is coming out on XBLA. And it's going to have levels that you don't have in the PSN version. So, you know, the one problem with the internet, with Twitter, is that when people get frustrated, they don't think before pressing enter when going on Twitter. They just press enter immediately and just let it sit out there. You know, they just wear their hearts on their sleeves and then they say, oh, we're sorry. Fortunately, a lot of people, you know, if a game is going to sell, they overlook such discrepancies. So anyways, moving on.
And the final comment from Hair Alien. At Star Citizen, asset cost for ships anywhere from $35,000 to $150,000. Holy fucking shit. No, just no. Jonah has a very good point. It could be that those polygons won't be visible at lower settings. Furthermore, I think that the heat of the action, you probably won't notice the extra details anyway.
By the way, you know, it does remind me of something when filmmaking is that it actually does happen, is that even if it's you can't see it, you can feel it's there. I mean, in a lot of scenes, you know, they'll say there's a bookcase there, right? And it's not right in the scene, but people say, well, they can feel the bookcase is there somehow, you know. It does have, you know, it does, even though you don't see it, it's there, you know.
In the early days of 3D gaming, in order to save polygons, what they would do is they would only render the half that was facing the player. Yeah. They would not render the back half of the characters or environments.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item from Paul Pretke. Hey, I missed last week's episode, so let's get going now. First of all, Insomniac did not develop Infamous. It was Sucker Punch, and they're also doing Infamous Second Son right now. They're still with Sony. Yeah, that was a mistake. Did you say they did Infamous or did I don't know?
I can't.
Yeah, but you know, so that's an error. At PS4 DRM, this is highly doubtful for me. Am I supposed to believe that a multi-billion-dollar company changes their policy and their entire E3 presentation within a couple of hours because of what the competitor did? No way. Jack Tretton of Sony was a guest on Up at Noon on IGN this week and said that's basically what he said. That the presentation we saw at E3 was what was always going to be. There was no there were no changes made after Microsoft conference. The game sharing YouTube video, and that's a different story. Before we move on, there's one thing we have to say, about Jack Tretton. You can always tell when he's lying. His lips move. I wouldn't believe Jack Tretton saying was. I would not carry an umbrella outside if Jack Tretton said it was raining. I you know, other people I believe, Yoshida, you know, or was it Wada, or is that no, that's Nintendo, never mind. But you know, there are certain people I believe. Jack Tretton is not one of them. I'm still waiting for my money for spotting PS3s in the wild during the launch.
Yes, he had a history of, shall we say, whoppers.
Yeah, and I want my $7,500, please, here in my palm. I want it right now. I could use it. add Xbone capabilities. That's a funny mistake to be made, but still might have happened. I don't think all the technical stuff really matters to an ordinary customer. I still believe that the price and the unfavorable media coverage that Microsoft got after E3 will be the deciding factor. Those people who show more interest, like you and me, already decide which console they're going to go with. I'm not starting my Xbox adventure with this one. The one thing I will say is that there's a lot of people who don't know anything about consoles, who want to buy it for their kid, or their kid expresses, I want this or I want that, you know, and they go in and they'll just make a purchase based on what the salesman says or what the price tag says, basically. Right. So, you know, yeah, you have the hardcore is going to buy all the units at launch for the most part. I know you like to camp out and that's how you got your Wii. And didn't you pay for that, didn't you?
I camped out for the 360 and I kind of fell into the Wii. I happened to be driving past a Best Buy when they had a line out and I got one, the last one of the Wii.
I thought you said you were eighth in line and they had 10 left.
That was the Xbox 360.
Oh, okay. So, you know, but there's a lot of people who make impulse purchases. And the thing is, I really don't look because both of them are going to be sold out. The PS4 is already sold out. The Xbox One is nearing sellout, which they said they were not going to order any more of the first shipment. I usually wait until like 6 to 12 months after before you start seeing trends.
Yeah.
Because basically all the ones that are being manufactured are going to be available unless you're Nintendo and you like to do something we call an artificial shortage. Although I'm wondering if Sony and Microsoft are going to do that tactic too. You know,
from what I understand, they're not gonna have to. Both of them, as far as I'm aware, GameStop just announced that their bottomless PS4 pre-orders
are gone. Yeah, that's what I said.
So,
yeah. Xbone running Win8 apps. I wonder how long this will hold up. I can see people developing apps that somehow hack the console the way people access the OS and the PS3 in the early days. However, there is a
that's not how it works.
That's not how it works, Powell. The problem with that was that Sony put the copy protection on the console itself. Microsoft put it in their offices and live. There's a difference between what the two of them. So what happens was that you could fool PSN into thinking that your PSN was someone else's PSN. I mean, PS3 was someone else's PS3. That was the big thing. You were able to fool them into thinking of something else. You could actually ban other people's consoles from afar, which is wacky. The more closed the system is, the safer it is. That's why I'm not a huge fan of social interaction with a new generation brings. We'll see how this develops. By the way, that was one of the funnier news items that came out about the Xbox One. Did you see that? In which, if you were a nasty little troll on Xbox Live, eventually the software would figure it out and basically would just have groups of trolls playing with each other. If you were a troll, the only people you could play were the trolls.
Yes, and actually, that reminds me, that was actually a warning message that came up when I fired up Dragon's Dogma, in that it said that, it, you know, if you behave badly, it will be noticed, and you will pay a price for it.
Well, the thing is that they're using calculations, and I sincerely hope that they're not as Polish as EA is. Coming to that, because we've had stories in which EA banned people left and right, and when they try to say, I didn't do this, they said, shut up, you. We don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's always funny when the little kids get banned from Xbox Live, and then you go onto the Xbox forum to see them whining about, why did I get banned?
Because you're acting like a little kid.
And then the reply comes from the enforcer saying, actually, you got banned for this reason, and then they get really quiet.
Oh, what's really funny is when people get their Xbox, modded Xboxes banned, and they complain about that. And say, well, you modded your Xbox.
I never did nothing. Actually, yeah, you did.
And they'll tell them the exact dates in which they detected what they did.
Yeah.
But it's funny. You know, a thing that reminds me is, remember when the Xbox 360 first came out and you had those tags, pro, casual, underground, and all that? And I thought they were actually going to do something with that, but
they never did
anything with it.
Yeah. All basically meaningless. Yeah, I don't even remember what mine is set for right now.
Mine was at Pro, and then I just went for just having fun.
Yeah.
And one funny thing is that everybody who ever wants, and this is how I know to avoid them, anybody who ever wants me, wants to be a friend request me, if they have a underground tag on them, I say, yeah, no, I don't think so. Because we know their tricks. You know, they invite you into a room, they kick you, but they get your information somehow. You know, they had that phishing scheme. I don't know if you remembered that. Uh-oh, and here's Jordan's favorite part of this letter. At Quap. Jonah, play Quap now. If the game is what the hell it's all about.
Tell me you played FWAP.
This could be an instrument of torture. If you don't run at least 10 meters, you're not getting your food. Parenting tip number 436. Actually, that sounds like Pink Floyd, doesn't it? You know, if you don't, how can you have your meat if you don't eat your, how can you have your pudding if you don't
eat
your meat?
How can you have any pudding if you won't eat your meat?
If you don't eat your meat, how can you have any pudding? I have not played Quap because I haven't been playing anything lately. I've just been extremely busy, but I promise I will play Quap and I will relate what I say, what happens. Okay, I have a feeling this is sort of like going into two.
It takes like 10 seconds to play. It's really hilarious.
Why have a feeling this is sort of like schmuck bait, sort of like two girls, one cup. All of a sudden, you know. Okay,
it's much better than that. And the only thing better than Quap is looking up the YouTube video of the kid who cosplayed Quap. That's the other bit that's just classic.
Mm. Okay, and now at E3 impressions, and I think this is his response to our question of the week. I've been going through the list of games, and it's really hard to choose. I'm going to focus on Sony games since that's the console I'm getting going for. Can I still say The Last of Us? No. Wait, The Last of Us actually was like a couple of days before it was released, actually. It was at E3, so that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Technically, it was released after E3, so it should count. No, it doesn't. I just said it didn't. I love this game.
I think it came out the Friday before E3.
Yeah, I love this game, and I'm afraid to read Jordan's review. You obviously don't get it. Sting his tongue out at you, and he hasn't even read the review. So the thing is that Jordan didn't say it was a necessarily bad game. He just said he started getting bored during it.
My beef is that if you separate the bit that you actually play from the story, the bit you actually play is not that interesting. It's kind of dull and there's not a lot to it.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Ben Croshaw, we all know as the guy from Zero Punctuation, is getting a hell for his review because he said that the story was absolute shit. You know, because what's it called? He said it's a common thread in all of this developer's games and also in Sony games, you know, and they all end with screw you, got mine, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's how Uncharted ends. That's how the God of War games end. That's how this game ends. Screw you, got mine. And what's funny is that I love the counter to that The Walking Dead game gives, you know, because that game is all about sacrifice.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's a different, completely different message. So if I'm going to choose something in the future, I am still very intrigued by Beyond Two Souls. They showed some new stuff about this game, and I have no idea how it'll pan out. Yeah, Jordan, didn't you say it just went in a complete 90-degree turn with that game?
Yeah, exactly. If you compare the two E3s, E3 last year versus E3 this year, Beyond Two Souls was introduced as kind of a claustrophobic, Twin Peaks-ish, Alan Wake-ish type game. And now with the current E3, it's, you know, we're taking this girl and we're training her by the military and sending her to Afghanistan to kill a guy. Mm. So apparently maybe it starts out at kind of a Twin Peaks-ish, Alan Wake-ish type thing and then becomes a Splinter Cell Modern Warfare kind of thing.
Or maybe it's like, what was the name? Specs Off the Line. Which actually is basically Heart of Darkness, in which you go to Dubai, which has been covered by a sandstorm, and basically you have to go through human depravity throughout it. And spoiler, you find out that you're a shithead to begin with. You know, you're actually a villainous character. So,
I thought I knew what direction it was going in, and now I have absolutely no idea what direction Beyond Two Souls is going in. But
everything you thought you knew about Beyond Two Souls is wrong.
All I know for certain is that Ellen Page is in it and William Dafoe is in it, and it looks very good.
Well, if William Dafoe is in it, then that ramps up the idea that it might be a Heart of Darkness type game by 100%.
That's true.
You know? I'm a little worried that Mr. Cage and Company, otherwise known as Quantic Dream, want to do too much with this title. I loved Heavy Rain, and I want to go back to this game someday, and if the story is as good as in Beyond, it will be amazing. I will say that the problem with Cage's writing is that he's a little bit tone deaf. For example, what's the name of his kid in Heavy Rain? And I remember it because it's, oh, Jason, that's right. The reason
Jason.
Why I know it's Jason.
Jason!
Yes, because it's
Jason!
Press, because there's a parody of it called Press X to Jason. Yeah. And the thing is that Jason is supposed to be a 10-year-old kid but he acts like he's a 4-year-old kid in the, you know.
He acts mildly retarded, yes.
Most intriguing next-gen game, I think I'll go with Infamous Second Son. I really enjoyed the first two games, and I platinum both of them. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the franchise post-Cole. And in case you missed... Go ahead.
Yeah, that could be a very good choice. And the only problem with Infamous Second Son is that it's not coming out until first or second quarter 2014.
Did you see the list of PS4 launch titles?
I have seen several lists. I haven't seen anything that's confirmed.
They have the confirmed list at IGN. And basically, it's almost all multi-platform games. And all the first-party games are going to be in the quote-unquote launch window. Which I know, I just say launch window, and somewhere Paul's ears are burning. It's like, and he's getting angry for some unknown reason. You know, sort of like saying Candle Jack. You know, you can't say candle.
I ain't saying it, because you know what happens when you say Candle Jack.
Okay, moving on. Also, in case you missed it, Jordan especially, since he has a Vita, Dead Nation is coming to the handheld. The game was an amazing PSN title. Sure, it's another zombie apocalypse game, but it was so much fun. It had a co-op mode, and you can go through the entire game in 2 to 3 hours if you made a speedrun. I recommend it wholeheartedly. Now, the problem that Jordan had was that there wasn't going to be any games specifically made for the Vita. I mean, you're going to have PSN games coming out on the Vita, but they're not going to be Vita-specific games.
Correct. And in this case... Dead Nation's a game that's been out on PSN for quite some time, and I don't see the point of bringing old games to a new platform. If you want to attract new buyers to the Vita, you have to have new games.
By the way, go ahead.
You know, the Sony ran the stats, and they found that virtually all of Vita owners, and they literally used the phrase "virtually all," started as PS3 owners. So. If you have a PS3 and a Vita, there's no point to buy Dead Nation on a Vita because you can already play it on your PS3 that you already own.
Now, you said that, but some news came out from about Nintendo that must be incredibly depressing to them. The Vita is outselling the Wii U.
In Japan, yes. They had a new title release, and Vita sales went up from 13,000 a week to something like 32 or 33,000 in 1 week. A 1 week bump for a new title is not a big deal. It's happened before. They need to maintain it. They need to sustain it. And I don't see how that's going to happen without new releases.
Yeah. I wonder what the Sony's policy on homebrew is, because maybe there's a homebrew market for Vita.
I would think a homebrew market would do very well. And they did open the Vita development kit for free for anybody who wants to develop.
Oh, there you go. I mean, if Sony's saying, hey, look, you know, we give up. So if you want to create stuff for this, go ahead.
Yeah.
Which I think is a proper way to do it. I mean, if you don't think you're going to be able to do anything with it, let people who actually like the console do something with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can do your little petition to get Phantasy Star Online 2 onto the Vita in the U.S. by the way, did you ever get around to State of Decay?
No, I don't think I did.
Okay, well, check it out on XBLA. And by the way, I'm suggesting this to everybody listening.
I downloaded it, okay. But I didn't actually play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting right now. Here's the thing. I know it's really, really well done, but I am so burned out on the open world game that I just simply can't right now. It's like, no open world, please. I don't have the time. I don't have the mentality to do an open world game. I don't want to do The Elder Scrolls. I don't want to do Fallout. I just want a nice linear experience. Thank you very much.
I think that was actually my problem with Dragon's Dogma, in that
it's
there's no
slightly open
direction.
World.
It's directionless.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, I guess if for whatever reason Monster Hunter Tri ever came to the 360 or any other consoles, I might try it out because I like the concept. Now I'm wondering if should I cash in my Bioshock Infinite contest victory to get a t-shirt, or should I wait for some next-gen games since they'll be region-free? Well, you know what? Guess what? Okay, you win the t-shirt, okay? It's yours. So all you have to do is let us know your address, and you can have the Titanfall t-shirt.
He already won Bioshock Infinite. How can he get the t-shirt too?
He's not going to get the Bioshock.
Oh, okay.
He's going to get instead. He's saying he's cashing in. You see, he thinks that, you know, Paul stomped really heavily for him to win Bioshock Infinite. But the problem was, of course, was that the region was wrong for him. He's out of TFC. So we're going to give him a Titanfall t-shirt. Now, the problem is that Titanfall is PC, 360, and Xbox One. But then again, it's a really cool t-shirt. Paul Pretke, we're going to send you your t-shirt. Hopefully, you're not bigger than a large. Or you can just – actually, if you are, you could just give it to someone else. But
he's not an American, so chances are he's not bigger than a large.
That's true. Anyways, we finally got back to gaming history. And to balance out all this Microsoft news, I mean, we did a PS3, PS4 news, but it was sort of – I wouldn't say it's negative, although it is sort of – you know, it's sort of foreboding. So the gaming history, and Jordan is the best equipped to do this gaming history. Take it away, Jordan.
Gaming history, PlayStation 2. The PlayStation 2 is a video game console manufactured by Sony Computer Entertainment. It was released on March 4th, 2000 in Japan, followed by North America and Europe later the same year. The sixth generation console competed with the Sega Dreamcast, Microsoft Xbox, and Nintendo GameCube. Sony announced the PlayStation 2, PS2 on March 1st, 1999. The video game console was positioned as a competitor to Sega's Dreamcast, the first sixth generation console to be released. Despite Sony's announcement, the Dreamcast went on to a very successful North American launch later that year, selling over 500,000 units within 2 weeks. Soon after the Dreamcast North American launch, Sony unveiled the PlayStation 2 at the Tokyo Game Show in September 1999. Sony showed fully playable demos of upcoming PlayStation 2 games such as Gran Turismo 2000, later released as Gran Turismo 3 A-Spec, and Tekken Tag Tournament, which showed the console's graphic abilities and power. The PS2 was launched in September 2000 in North America and October in Europe. Directly after its release, it was difficult to find PS2 units on retailer shelves due to manufacturing delays. Another option was purchasing the console online through auction websites such as eBay, where people paid over $1,000 for a PS2. The PS2 initially sold well, partly on the basis of the strength of the PlayStation brand and the console's backward compatibility, selling over 980,000 units in Japan by March 5, 2000, 1 day after launch. This allowed the PS2 to tap the large install base established by the PlayStation, another major selling point over the competition. Later, Sony added new development kits for game developers and more PS2 units for consumers. The PS2 built-in functionality also expanded its audience beyond the gamer. The PS2's built-in DVD functionality also expanded its audience beyond the gamer, as its debut pricing was the same or less than standalone DVD player, making the console a low-cost entry to the home theater market.
By the way, the two things. One, I know a lot of people who don't even touch video games who had a PlayStation 2 because they would just pop in their DVDs. And also, that was one of the miscalculations that Sony made with the PlayStation 3, because what happened with the DVD, you know, they said, well, you know, people paid for the PS2 without buying a single game for it. Well, I guess they didn't realize that the jump from VHS to DVD was not the same jump from DVD to Blu-ray.
Well, that's true. The success of the PS2 at the end of 2000 caused Sega problems both financially and competitively, and Sega announced the discontinuation of the Dreamcast in March 2001, just 18 months after its successful launch. The newer rivals, Microsoft's Xbox and Nintendo GameCube, which were then released, many analysts predicted a close three-way matchup during among the three consoles.
Stop. You skipped a line. You said PS2 remained the only active sixth-generation console for over 6 months.
I don't have that on here.
Don't? What?
No, let me refresh my page. Hang on.
I never changed it. That's bizarre. This is going to be fun to edit. By the way, we are still recording, so at least there's that.
So let me just go back to the beginning of the sentence that I have here. The PS2 remained as the only active sixth-generation console for over 6 months before it would face competition from new arrivals, Microsoft's Xbox and the Nintendo GameCube, which were then released. Many analysts predicted a close three-way matchup among the three consoles, the Xbox having the most powerful hardware, while the GameCube was the least expensive console, and Nintendo changed its policy to encourage third-party developers. And while the PlayStation 2 theoretically had the weakest spec of the three, it had a head start due to an installed base plus stronger developer commitment, as well as a built-in DVD video player. The Xbox required an adapter, while the GameCube lacked support entirely.
Which is not entirely true, because basically the Xbox came with a controller that was green and yellow, that was basically a keypad. So it wasn't that it had an adapter, you just couldn't use it freely, you know.
You couldn't play a DVD in the original Xbox unless you bought the dongle to plug it in, because Microsoft wouldn't pay the DVD license fee.
Yeah.
While the PlayStation 2's initial game lineup was considered mediocre, this changed during the 2001 holiday season with the release of several blockbuster games that maintained the PS2's sales momentum and held off its newer rivals. Sony also countered the Xbox by temporarily securing PlayStation 2 exclusives for highly anticipated games such as Grand Theft Auto series and Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty. Sony, unlike Sega with its Dreamcast, originally placed little emphasis on online gaming during the first few years, although that changed upon the launch of the online-capable Xbox. Coinciding with the release of Xbox Live, Sony released the PlayStation Network adapter in late 2002, with several online first-party titles released alongside it, such as SOCOM US Navy SEALs, to demonstrate its active support for internet play. Sony also advertised heavily, and its online model had the support of Electronic Arts. EA did not offer online Xbox titles until 2004.
There was a reason for that. Basically, it's the same thing that they want now. EA wanted to use its own servers. Microsoft said, no, you have to use our servers. So they had that argument for a few years. The thing is and that...
The joke of it is that no online games used any servers. They were all peer-to-peer, but that's all. That's beside the point.
Well, for the Xbox, it was online servers.
But no, they were all paying peer-to-peer. For with Xbox they still Live. Are peer-to-peer. That's the whole point of having 300,000 Xbox One. If you look at the results of the news from the Xbox One, you'll see Microsoft admitting that all of the Xbox 360 is peer-to-peer.
Yeah, but here's the thing is that what's really interesting is that despite Sony doing the PlayStation Network adapter and all that, its online really sucked. It was it was just a marketing move, really.
It was a marketing move, and there were all of about four games that supported it.
Yeah.
Although Sony and Nintendo both started out late, and although both followed a decentralized model of online gaming where the responsibility is up to the developer to provide the servers, Sony's moves made online gaming a major selling point of the PS2. In September 2004, time for the launch of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Sony revealed a newer, slimmer PS2 in preparation for the launch of the new models. The PlayStation 2 went on to become the best-selling video game console of all time, selling over 150 million units. More than 3,800 game titles have been released for the PS2 since launch, and more than 1.5 billion copies have been sold.
Now, one of the good things is that, thankfully, that Sony crushed Sega because I was able to get the Dreamcast for $50. So, and the thing is that they still released a lot of games after that happened.
Sega's problem was the death of a thousand cuts. In that they lost money on every hardware console sold, and they sold so many of them they lost too much money too quickly, and that's what ended up killing Sega.
And Microsoft is able to avoid that, even though they lost money on their initial consoles. Was the fact that people were starting to pay for Xbox Live, so they're getting that money back. And also, right. Microsoft had something else called Windows, and at the time, I believe it was 2000, Windows ME, Millennium Edition. And after that, because that was a disaster, after the Millennium Edition came Windows XP. Was it Windows XP that came after Windows ME?
XP came after ME, yes.
Yeah, so they were getting money hand over fist for Windows XP, so they were able to weather, because if you remember, when did Microsoft finally get in the black with the Xbox console? It was like
they had a profitable quarter. I want to say halfway through the lifespan. I'm not sure exactly when. 2002, 2003, something like that.
No, I mean, overall, I mean, they finally were in the black with the Xbox, I think, like last year. You know, so it took them 10 years.
Took a long time. Yeah.
So Sega did not have, that's what's worrisome about Nintendo. Nintendo does not have that backup service. I mean, Sony can still sell TVs and radios,
Yeah. Microsoft. Well, the way I phrased it online was that, Microsoft was losing $1 billion a year on the Xbox, which means Bill Gates could personally fund the Xbox for the next 54 years.
Or better yet, you just tack on another $10 for every copy of Windows that's sold. Yeah. Okay. So that's the PS2. I never owned one, but not because I didn't like Sony, but because I wasn't into console gaming at the time. I didn't get into console gaming, like I said, until the Dreamcast was being sold for the price of a game, So the question of the week is a sort of a 180 here. It's what?
Excuse me.
The question of the week this week is sort of like a 180 from everything we've been talking about. What's your favorite indie game released in the past year? So, Jordan, do you have a favorite indie game released in the past year?
I don't play indie games. I wouldn't know.
You got to be kidding me. No, Xbox Live Arcade games? PSN games?
I'm not interested in indie games. Every indie game I've looked at has been a steaming pile of crap, okay. So I don't...
Let's change it for you. How about digital download?
No, not really.
Really?
Yeah. If there's a free demo, I'll take a look at it, but so far I've not seen one worth my time.
Maybe State of Decay, maybe the first one this year. I mean, State of Decay may be the first one this year, then.
Maybe. I've got it up on my screen now. We'll see. But I'm not impressed with indie titles. I looked at Thomas Was Alone. I thought Thomas Was Alone was more voiceover than game. If you've seen the voiceovers on YouTube, you've seen all there is to that game. Super Meat Boy is cute. They spent more time in developing a logo for the game than they did developing the game itself. I'm not impressed with indie games. Braid was probably the last indie game that I actually was interested in and invested in. The play mechanic got too bizarre and weird after about 5 levels in, and I just gave up.
It's tough for me too, because not because I don't play indie games, it's just that I haven't been playing much lately, and it's sort of like I have to remind myself what indie games are, and I can't really go with Telltale with Poker Night, you know. And I can't go with. It's cheating to go with Telltale. It's cheating to go with PopCap, because
I wouldn't say either Telltale or PopCap counts as indie anymore.
Okay, the true indie game that I've enjoyed most in the past year. I have to make sure this is released this past year. Dungeons of Dreadmore, which is basically a roguelike, you know, but it's sort of like Monty Python meets a roguelike. It's very witty, makes a lot of funny statements, and it acknowledges the fact that your dungeon is out to get you. You're probably going to die. And it celebrates when you die, too, and taunts you. And I'm sure you've played roguelikes in the past.
It sounds kind of like Tecmo's Deception on the PlayStation, where you actually were the bad guy setting up a dungeon with traps to kill all the adventurers who were coming to get you.
Yeah. So I'm basically just under the wire, because this is released almost a year ago. So Dungeons of Dreadmore. I'm probably going to slap myself and say, oh, right, that game, you know, is an indie game, you know, and all that. But that's right now. The only Kickstarter game... video game that I've gotten is Strike Suit Zero, and I still haven't played it. So that's gotten mediocre reviews, and I backed it because I just didn't know what I was doing at the time, and you know, it's basically a mech suit flight sim. Here's the question. Some of these major crowdfunded titles, can you really call them indie titles? I mean, could you call Star Citizen an indie title? That thing has raised $15 million. And it's still going strong. They've already released the stretch goals for $16 and $17 million.
If you look at the millions of dollars, is that actual funding or is that pre-sales of the game?
That's funding. I mean, they're continuing to receive funding for the game.
But it's people who are pre-buying the game. That's where the funding is coming.
It's the same thing. Well, we're still getting in on this deal, you know?
That's definitely an indie title then, right? Because it's not... They're not getting funding from EA. Well, they're getting funding from people pre-ordering the game.
But we had this problem with the Independent Spirit Awards. I mean, was Fargo and Boogie Nights really indie movies?
I don't think so. I think those are both studio movies, weren't they?
But they're still quote-unquote considered indie movies. I mean, we're getting into a whole gray area with this crowdfunding thing. By the way, something we also didn't mention in this week's notes, did you notice the controversy that's going on with Broken Age, which was originally the Double Fine Adventure, the game that started this entire thing in the first place? People are getting upset because Tim Schafer is saying, well, you know, we're looking at the numbers and we're finding that we're going to be broke. We're not going to be able to complete. We're only going to complete 25% of this game unless we go to Steam Early Access, you know, to raise more money for it. And you can imagine that people are sort of annoyed at that, thinking, "Well, why did we give you money in the first place?" You know, it seems like they exceeded their reach there. Now, fortunately, the game that I'm really interested in, Oblivion's game, Project Eternity, has no such problems. The only problem I have there is that I'm hoping the fact that they're able to control when they release it, it won't be massively buggy. Jordan?
Oh, I prefer to think most games are not massively buggy.
Well, come on, Jordan. You know Obsidian's little history there.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's the question of the week. What's your favorite indie game released in the past year? You don't even play. Do you ever play Facebook games? Those are indie games for the most part.
Nope.
Mm. Okay, so just playing Mafia Wars just killed you off that route, huh?
The only Facebook game I ever played was one of the Assassin's Creed tie-in games. Oh. And I maxed out all my money real quick and just kind of ignored it and forgot about it.
That spy MMO that Sony was coming out with that was canceled, they had a brilliant Facebook tie-in game. And you know what? If they had just said, screw it, we're just going to focus on this on the Facebook game, it would have made a lot of money. I mean, Sony screwed up there, you know. Okay, so let's look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history article. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or our forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum or send us comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStooge.com. You can also check out Jordan's review of The Last of Us at GameStooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. If you're not leaving us iTunes comments, we don't know how much you love us.
Please tell us you love us. Please tell us you love us.
Yeah, because you know we're very passive aggressive and also I forgot that. I guess passive aggressive and is enough, right? Or OCDing maybe?
Could be. I'm playing that zombie game you told me about, by the way.
Okay. Anyways, we'll see you next week. Bye bye.